How to think about climate damage. Before I evaluate the state of fossil-fueled climate mastery for wildfires, storms, and floods, I need to discuss another form of climate danger besides climate-related disaster deaths: climate damage. Most of the danger we face from wildfires is not from death, but from the damage they can do to our property, including homes, livestock, and crops. Damage is also a significant part of the danger from storms and floods. To evaluate the state of climate-related damage properly, I believe there are five key truths to keep in mind. Truths that are usually denied by our knowledge system as part of its denial of the power of fossil-fueled climate mastery. 1. Damage is significant, but not as significant as deaths. Damage to property can be very harmful, but it can also be recovered from in ways that death cannot, namely by empowered places using their extreme productive ability to repair and rebuild, or to help unempowered places to rebuild. Much of our knowledge system's coverage of climate danger today is in terms of damage, not deaths. One reason for this, which I will illustrate repeatedly, is that it's easy to distort data to claim that climate damage is increasing ominously due to fossil fuel use, while it is very difficult to manipulate data to claim that climate disaster deaths are increasing due to fossil fuels. Shamefully, those who claim climate catastrophe almost without exception ignore the fact of rapidly declining climate-related disaster deaths, instead of recognizing that fact and incorporating it into their thinking. 2. Damage should be measured as a percentage of wealth or income, not in absolute terms. It is common to claim that damage from wildfires, storms, or floods is increasing in absolute terms. For example, wildfires destroyed more property value in 2020 than they did in 1920. But of course wildfires destroyed more property value in 2020, because there was far more valuable property in 2020 than in 1920. The real number we want to know is how much wealth was destroyed relative to the amount that exists and is being created. Thus, when I discuss wildfire, storm, and flood damage, I will be doing so in terms of percentage of GDP, a rough measure of the amount of new wealth being created. So long as climate damage is a small percentage of GDP, then it is not a catastrophic, let alone an apocalyptic, problem. 3. Increasing damage can be a rational and safe choice. As human beings become more productive and prosperous, we can rationally choose to live in places that put more of our wealth in harm's way. For example, we may want to live nearer to forests despite greater fire risk, or nearer to the coasts despite greater storm and flood risks. These risks can be rational, especially in the empowered world, where we can readily rebuild destroyed property using machine labor, as opposed to the unempowered world, where a storm can wipe out a lifetime of someone's manual labor. Although even there, the empowered world helps tremendously with rebuilding. Thus, if we see statistics showing increasing damage, that isn't necessarily a sign of insufficient climate mastery. It can actually reflect increasing climate mastery. 4. Increasing damage can be caused by government bailout policies. While increasing damage can be rational, it is often caused by policies that are, in my view, irrational: government bailouts of disaster-prone areas. For example, if the government is known to give disaster relief to precarious places like New Orleans, many more people will choose to build there at a risk level that doesn't make sense for them, because they know that someone else will pay the bill. When we see disaster damage numbers, we must be aware that much of the damage can come from government bailout policies, not a lack of climate mastery. 5. Increasing damage can be caused by anti-impact, anti-mastery policies. Climate mastery, like all forms of productive activity, always requires impacting nature. For example, drought mastery requires building irrigation infrastructure, and temperature mastery requires building homes and gas lines. The same type of anti-impact policies that are used to restrict the production of fossil fuels and many other forms of development can also be used to restrict the production of various forms of climate protection. For example, anti-logging and anti-brush clearing policies can exacerbate wildfires, and anti-dam policies can exacerbate flooding. When looking at climate damage in an anti-impact era such as ours, we always need to look for anti-impact policies that are artificially increasing climate damage by thwarting climate mastery. This is above all the case with damage from wildfires, which, because of anti-impact policies, is significantly increasing in places where it could be decreasing. Mastering wildfires. How significant an ability will continuing fossil fuel use give us to master wildfires? Once again, our knowledge system tells us not very much. It portrays wildfires as a worse danger than ever in terms of death and especially in terms of property damage, already overwhelming our meager adaptation abilities. Let's get deaths out of the way first. Wildfires are a tiny cause of death, killing one out of 100 million people worldwide, about the same rate as death by lightning strike. But surely, damage is getting much worse, right? In 2019 in Australia, and in 2020 and 2021 in California, we saw overwhelming wildfires in empowered places that clearly were not mastering the wildfires that went out of control, doing massive property damage, as well as causing major short-term deteriorations in air quality. Thus, wildfires seem to be a danger that rising CO2 levels are already overwhelming us with the future portending far more overwhelming wildfire problems. However, the reality is that in most places around the world, wildfires are decreasing despite a warmer planet and longer wildfire seasons, and this can be traced directly to fossil-fueled wildfire mastery abilities, including fire suppression. California and Australia's problems are the result not of an inability to master wildfires, but of anti-impact policies that make mastering wildfires illegal. Let's be clear. Massive amounts of wildfire are a natural phenomenon. Contrary to the portrayal of the natural planet and climate as a delicate nurturer that would never endanger us with fire or unhealthy smoky air, widespread wildfires and dangerous smoke are a massive natural phenomenon. Take California. Before Europeans arrived in America, an estimated 4.4 million acres in California burned annually. That average is more than burned in the horrific year of 2020, and 16 times more than in 2019. Visibility and air quality problems due to fires in California used to be far worse. Here's an 1898 account. Of the hundreds of persons who visit the Pacific slope of California every summer to see the mountains, few see more than the immediate foreground and a haze of smoke. Today, most of the world is far safer from wildfires and wildfire damage because of fossil-fueled wildfire mastery. Three crucial forms of wildfire mastery are reducing wildfire fuel load, building fire barriers, and intelligently fighting fires. Reducing wildfire fuel load. The core of mastering wildfires is reducing fuel load. Fuel load is the amount of fire-prone wood that exists in a given area. The higher the fuel load, the more prone an area is to a dangerous wildfire. For centuries, people living near forests have sought to manage the fuel load through controlled burns, deliberately starting fires so as to consume excess fuel load before it gets to the point of being able to do enormous damage. While earlier ways of doing this were admirable, today we have the ability to use fossil-fueled machines to do far more targeted, controlled burns by creating fire breaks to prevent uncontrolled spread, planning the exact area to be burned, and assessing success with satellite imagery or via airplane. In addition to controlled burns, we can use fossil-fueled machine labor to do logging, in which we actually convert the wood that could cause wildfire into wealth, lumber, or wood chips for generating electricity. We can also do mechanical brush clearing using tractors with mulchers and other equipment attached. When humans employ these fossil-fueled methods of proper fuel load reduction, the danger of wildfires is dramatically reduced. But these methods require a willingness to impact nature, a willingness that does not exist in the places with the biggest wildfire problems. Barrier building. In addition to lowering the fuel load of forests to minimize the danger of wildfires, we can also use fossil-fueled machine labor to build barriers between forests and people, or if desired, between one area of forest and another. With enough barriers separating humans from forests, or different forest areas from one another, fire is disarmed. But note that barrier building, along with controlled burns and logging, requires a willingness to impact nature, to not leave it unchanged. Direct firefighting. In addition to using fossil-fueled machines to reduce fuel load and build barriers to prevent dangerous fires, we use fossil-fueled machines and fossil-fuel materials to fight fires when they start. We use high-energy fossil-fueled machines, like trucks and aircraft for transporting water, and flame-resistant oil-derived materials such as Nomex to protect firefighters. Note, direct firefighting is only effective if it is part of a broader mastery strategy that includes fuel load reduction and/or barrier building. The true state of wildfire mastery is that it is enormously powerful, to the point that, if applied properly, it is extremely hard to think of a change in climate that could overwhelm human beings with wildfire dangers. If we reduce fuel load and build barriers, fire can't get all that bad. Today's wildfire horrors are caused by anti-impact, anti-mastery policies. The worst anti-mastery policies today are those related to fuel load. Instead of mastering fuel load, places like California and Australia allow it to build up to levels that would never be permitted even in primitive, unempowered societies. Inspired and led by the anti-impact movement, California and Australia have eschewed controlled burns and forest clearing, let alone logging, as unnatural. This turns forests into infernos in waiting. It's helpful to think of increasing the fuel load of a forest as a highly destructive form of energy production. By allowing the fuel load to build up, we are effectively turning a forest into a death machine that is extremely hard to counteract with our existing firefighting machines. But if we used our fuel load reducing machines properly, our firefighting machines wouldn't be overwhelmed at all. Barrier building is also opposed by the anti-impact movement because it involves killing trees and replacing tree-filled areas with unnatural, treeless areas. Compounding the anti-mastery policies of increasing fuel load and not building barriers are several other bad policies. Excessive fire suppression, meaning that too many fires are immediately put out when they should actually be allowed to burn in a controlled fashion. This increases fuel load. Man-made ignition events. While fires can start via lightning, most of the most destructive fires today are started by humans. Overall, close to 85% of wildfires are human-caused, including both deliberate and accidental causes. People living too close to poorly managed, fire-prone forests. Poorly maintained power lines. In California, since the year 2000, 500,000 acres have burned in fires that were initiated by power lines, five times more than from 1980 to 2000. A major reason for these problems is that money that was requested for power line safety upgrades and maintenance projects went instead to California's costly green energy projects. Despite all the bad policies, above all, anti-impact, anti-mastery policies making fires unnecessarily costly and deadly, the amount of burned area is still trending downward overall around the world. This reflects the fact that fossil-fueled wildfire mastery is an enormously powerful force. given that the empowered world can, with fossil-fueled wildfire mastery, lower fuel load, and build barriers to prevent the spread of fire, the idea that it will necessarily be ravaged by out-of-control wildfires if climate conditions change significantly is absurd. Another example of the delicate nurture assumption driving climate mastery denial. It is almost impossible to imagine anything resembling a catastrophic problem for those practicing wildfire mastery. Additionally, when necessary, the wildfire mastery capabilities of the empowered world can be used to help the unempowered world with future wildfire challenges. We must keep in mind both wildfire mastery and our knowledge system's wildfire mastery denial when we hear claims about catastrophic wildfires in the future. It is extremely likely that absent wildfire mastery denial, the predicted wildfires would not be catastrophic. Mastering storms. How significant an ability will continuing fossil fuel use give us to master dangerous storms? Again, according to our knowledge system, not very much. Our knowledge system portrays storms as a worse danger than ever, already overwhelming our meager adaptation abilities. But the real data say otherwise. Those in the empowered world today are safer from storms than anyone has ever been, with the unempowered world also experiencing an unusually high degree of safety from storms. Overall deaths from storms have declined 55.8% after peaking in the 1970s, when a massive storm in the unempowered world, specifically what is now Bangladesh, killed 200,000. Why are people around the world safer than ever from storms? Because the natural climate is far more dangerous storm-wise than we are taught, and our widely dismissed fossil-fueled mastery abilities are enormous, overwhelming massive natural storm danger, as well as any man-made storm danger so far. Contrary to the portrayal of the natural climate as a delicate nurturer that would never destroy us with deadly storms had we not angered it with CO2, there is massive natural storm danger around the world that has long overwhelmed the unempowered. Long before significant CO2 emissions, storms were taking tens and even hundreds of thousands of human lives in the unempowered world, such as the 300,000 lives lost in an 1839 India cyclone. The fact that such death tolls are unimaginable in the empowered world today is, once again, a product of fossil-fueled climate mastery. For example, as I discussed in Chapter 4, we use fossil-fueled machine labor to build sturdy, resilient structures. Early warning systems also depend on fossil-fueled machines, such as rockets bringing satellites into space, observation airplanes, and high-powered computers. And we use fossil-fueled machines to evacuate at-risk areas if necessary, as well as to transport relief into storm-stricken areas. These fossil-fueled machines make the empowered world far less at risk of death, as well as help the unempowered world. For example, storm warning machines, evacuation machines, and rebuilding machines are all used to help the unempowered world cope better with storms. When Tropical Cyclone Kenneth threatened East Africa in 2019, the empowered world's early warning systems helped Africans prepare, shutting down schools and airports, and quickly deploying resources to internal aid organizations. Without those early warning systems, the population would have been caught off guard because, as UNICEF spokesman Daniel Timma pointed out, cyclones in that area are very, very rare. And so the population is not used to these events, and it's less resilient. While the dramatic decrease in storm deaths is the most important aspect of storm mastery, it's important to also look at storm damage. Storm damage is portrayed as a rapidly increasing cost that's already starting to overwhelm us and will get far worse. The half-truth of all this is that storm damage is increasing in absolute terms. But if we keep in mind the truths I mentioned earlier in this chapter, we see that storm damage is not getting worse. Storm damage shows no trend as a percentage of GDP, and that's despite several factors driving up storm damage that have nothing to do with rising CO2 levels. Storm damage is increased by people's rational choices to live in more storm-prone areas. For example, those who love the weather in Miami are much more able to afford hurricane damage than those in previous generations were. Storm damage is also increased by irrational policies that force taxpayers to effectively provide storm insurance for those who choose to live in storm-prone areas. Even with supposedly more dangerous storms due to rising CO2 levels, we'll examine this in Chapter 9, and even with rational and irrational incentives that increase storm damage as a percentage of GDP shows no trend. That's testament to the power of storm mastery. In fact, storm mastery is such a powerful force that we can actually make storms a benefit. Consider a standard thunderstorm. 300 years ago, what we consider standard could have easily destroyed someone's home. But in the empowered world, with modern sturdy buildings and flood control, a thunderstorm can literally be, and often is, a romantic setting. Because the empowered world's storm mastery abilities, including our ability to help the unempowered world, are so great, for any increase in storm activity to be a true problem, let alone a catastrophic problem, it would have to involve a complete difference in kind from what we experience today. Even a doubling or tripling in the frequency of storms wouldn't come close. A catastrophic problem would require storms multiple times more intense than today's worst storms, such that existing mastery capabilities didn't apply. Barring that, we can expect continuing and expanding fossil fuel use to lead to continuing and expanding storm mastery and unprecedented storm safety. We must keep in mind the context of the enormous power of fossil-fueled storm mastery when considering predictions about storm-related damage and death in the future. And we must be aware of our knowledge system's consistent storm mastery denial, meaning that claims of catastrophic storm increases are likely to involve such denial. Next, let's look at the climate mastery benefits of continuing fossil fuel use in what is for many the most worrisome climate danger, flooding, especially from rising sea levels. Mastering floods and sea level rises. How significant an ability will continuing fossil fuel use give us to master flooding, including the flooding that can come from rising sea levels? Once again, according to our knowledge system, not very much. Our knowledge system portrays flooding, including flooding from rising sea levels, as a worse danger than ever, already overwhelming our meager adaptation abilities. So far, we've seen the same pattern over and over. Our knowledge system portrays some climate-related problem as getting far worse, when in fact, from a human flourishing perspective, it's getting better. But surely flooding, a problem intimately connected to much-bemoaned sea level rises, in addition to allegedly worse storms, is growing, with disastrous consequences. Our adaptive abilities are no match for rising seas, right? Wrong. Once again, the climate danger data show that the empowered world is safer today from flooding than anyone has ever been, and the unempowered world is far safer than it used to be. If we look at global data, we find that flood-related deaths have decreased by over 99% since the peak of reported flood deaths in the 1930s. Why is this the case? Once again, there are ignored but enormous climate mastery benefits of fossil fuels. In this case, flood mastery benefits that overwhelm natural flooding danger as well as any additional man-made danger. Contrary to the portrayal of the natural climate as a delicate nurturer with safe sea levels, most areas near an ocean, large sea, or river can be flooded due to dynamic changes in water levels. And when people are unempowered, their ability to produce any kind of flood protection infrastructure or to recover from floods is meager. In unempowered generations past, floods devastated people to an extent that is unimaginable in the unempowered world today. A flood that hit Europe in 1362 is estimated to have killed up to 100,000 people, and the Central China flood of 1931, by some estimates, took the lives of close to 4 million. Here's how a newspaper account described the China flood. "For a distance of 1,000 miles, the waters of this immense waterway have overflowed its banks and have inundated the country for a width of 50 miles, with the result that 31 million people have been reduced to conditions verging on starvation. Their homes and crops have been destroyed. Buildings have been undermined and are collapsing, killing the inmates." That's tens of millions of people being devastated to near starvation or actual starvation because of one flood. Such death and damage are inconceivable today because of the empowered world's level of flood mastery, including its ability to provide relief to the unempowered world. The number one form of flood mastery is flood protection infrastructure, which is produced by fossil-fueled machines and consists of many fossil-fueled machines. A prime example of such infrastructure is the Netherlands, which protects its people from floods despite being near or below sea level. 50% of the Netherlands lies less than 3 feet above sea level, and roughly 1/8 of the country is at an elevation below sea level, in some cases as much as 22 feet below sea level. Today, the Netherlands has flood protection infrastructure consisting of thousands of miles of dikes, dams, and electronically operated storm walls and gates. Much of the system has been designed to withstand floods that have a probability of occurring once in 10,000 years. There is nothing stopping other nations from making such changes except will and cost. The lower the cost of machine labor, the more easily nations around the world can build flood protection systems. Today, flood mastery is at such an unprecedented level that over 100 million people live below the level of high tide in their area. What about flood damage? Looking at figures in terms of wealth, damage from floods as a percentage of GDP in the U.S. has declined since the early 20th century. This declining flood damage is in spite of the usual drivers of increasing flood damage, rational and irrational. Much like individuals choose to live in more storm-prone areas, they also choose, often rationally, to live in more flood-prone areas, often the same areas. Many human beings love the water. I am one of them. The more resources we have, the more we can afford to live in an area that may be at risk of flood damage because we know A, we can avoid death through evacuation, and B, we can afford to rebuild. This has contributed to a dramatic increase in the number of people living in low-lying areas. Also contributing to the increase in people living in low-lying areas are government flood insurance policies that make it nearly financially risk-free to live in flood-prone zones. If the government is going to bail us out from floods, it relieves us of responsibility for flooding, as well as governments of responsibility for planning and building proper flood protection infrastructure. In spite of all these incentives to put more property in harm's way, flood damage measured as a percentage of GDP is going down in the U.S., one of the few places with reliable flood damage data, indicating that human beings are getting better and better at protecting their property as they get richer. The reality of flood danger today is that we're so good at dealing with it that we can live below sea level and choose to live in the most flood-prone areas. That is the opposite of a climate crisis. It's a climate renaissance. Given the ability of the empowered world to master floods to the point of living below sea level, an ability that can be used to help the unempowered world, sea level rises to be truly problematic, let alone catastrophic, would have to be far, far larger and faster than anything we've experienced in the last 170 years of rising CO2 levels. Unlike some of the other hypothetical climate dangers, though, a truly rapid rise in sea level could overwhelm our current capabilities. For example, if Al Gore's portrayal in An Inconvenient Truth of 20-foot sea level rises happening on a timescale of decades was valid, that would be an overwhelming challenge for our current flood mastery capabilities. So, when looking at the climate impacts of rising CO2 levels in chapters 8 and 9, I will pay particular attention to whether there is any likelihood of this unprecedented increase in sea level rise, or whether claims of catastrophic sea level rises involve not truly catastrophic rises, but rather once again denying the climate mastery abilities that already make it possible for humans to live below sea level. Recognizing growing mastery in a world of climate mastery denial. The purpose of this chapter is to understand the climate mastery abilities that will come with fossil fuels' climate side effects, so that we can understand to what extent any negative side effects will be masterable. What we've seen so far with every type of climate danger is that, contrary to our knowledge system's portrayal of mastery under the limp banner of adaptation as a weak, already overwhelmed force, fossil-fueled climate mastery is an enormously powerful force that has overwhelmed massive natural climate danger as well as any man-made climate danger so far. Thus, for any future climate dangers to cause anything resembling catastrophe would require negative climate impacts that were a complete difference in kind from anything that has occurred over the last 170 years of rising CO2 levels. To make things even better, on top of our ability to master every type of climate danger, there is another major form of climate mastery to keep in mind as we look at fossil fuels' future climate impacts: our ability to master our location. Fossil fuels give us an unprecedented ability to choose where we live and thus choose our climate. In the past, changing locations was a long and perilous process. Today, we can jump in a car or on a train or on an airplane at virtually a moment's notice. And we're not journeying into the unknown. We can research on the internet where we want to live, and we can visit different places in advance before deciding on a final destination. Even predictions of rapid climate change are made in terms of decades at minimum, not months or years, meaning that there is time to move if a given location faces significant new climate danger. And though it is somewhat costly when individuals and businesses move, it's not some unprecedented type of cost. Populations are constantly moving for all sorts of reasons, including climate. Think of how rapidly modern cities have sprung up in places like China, or how between 1850 and 1950, America rapidly transformed from a rural population to an urban population while adding tens of millions of new people. Thus, when considering the impact of rising CO2 levels from continuing fossil fuel use on climate, we must factor in not only the enormous, thus far overwhelming ability to master almost every existing climate on Earth, which I explained in the previous sections of this chapter, but also the climate mobility to move to any other climate on Earth over time. And we must also keep in mind that as fossil fuel use continues, fossil-fueled climate mastery will grow, as more people will have more time and machine labor to develop even better forms of climate mastery and location mastery. One potential form of climate mastery that could completely counter truly dangerous rates of warming, if those actually occurred in the future, would be global climate cooling technology, often referred to under the banner of geoengineering. One type of global climate cooling technology being explored involves spraying into the upper atmosphere small particles that would slightly decrease the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth. This would mimic the cooling effect that we know a large volcanic eruption can have. For example, the Mount Pinatubo eruption of 1991 decreased the amount of sunlight reaching the Earth's surface by 2.5%, with an estimated temporary decrease of 0.5 degrees Celsius over 18 months. 0.5 degrees Celsius is equivalent to half the amount of total warming since 1850. Spraying small particles directly into the upper atmosphere would involve the same mechanism while avoiding air pollution. It would also be temporary and reversible. The particles dissipate after a period of time. And the cost of implementation would be very low. This is in contrast to the fossil fuel elimination policies advocated today, which would cause mass death and destruction with no prospect of cooling the planet in the near future, only if everyone self-destructively agreed to the policies stopping the planet's warming. The point of raising this kind of global cooling technology is not to advocate it. It would be justified only if there were indeed a severe global warming problem and if the technology had been proven to work as intended, but to point out how powerful climate mastery can be. The enormous and growing power of fossil-fueled climate mastery is crucial context to keep in mind as we look at the future climate impacts of fossil fuels, especially crucial because our knowledge system is engaged in systematic climate mastery denial, to the point where we don't notice the climate renaissance we're in. We have seen over and over that our knowledge system trivializes, dismisses, and ultimately denies the overwhelming power that is fossil-fueled climate mastery. Climate mastery denial is so massive that the knowledge system frequently makes totally masterable hypothetical climate scenarios into catastrophes. Consider a much publicized claim, which I first saw debunked by statistician Bjorn Lomborg, that the science shows that sea level rises will lead to 187 million homeless climate refugees. A popular story from 2019 about sea level rise told us, in the words of the Washington Post, that sea level rise could be even worse than we've been led to expect. It was so bad, it would make 187 million people homeless. Bloomberg News discussed cities swallowed by the rising ocean. The bestseller, The Uninhabitable Earth, made much of this claim to argue that we need to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use. The basis of these claims was a 2011 paper that claimed that if some extreme sea level rise predictions came true, 187 million people would be forced to move if sea level rises were dramatic and if no one did anything to adapt to the sea level rises. The paper explicitly says, to its credit, that humans adapt proactively, and such adaptation can greatly reduce the possible impact. When that happens, again, as the paper itself says, the problem of environmental refugees almost disappears. It also notes that the main consequence of a large rise in sea level is a larger investment in protection infrastructure. And it explicitly says that it is incorrect to automatically assume a global-scale population displacement owing to a large rise in sea level. The conclusion: under what are considered realistic adaptation assumptions, an extreme scenario of high sea level rise would mean 305,000 people forced to move in 80 years. As a point of comparison, every year, 1.6 million Americans move abroad. Thus, an objective reporting of the paper would have led to the headline, "Even highly speculative increases in sea levels will be little problem for an empowered world." Instead, trusted news institutions and our anti-impact knowledge system took the 187 million refugees number out of context and made it seem like scientific certainty, even though the authors clearly said, in effect, that this could not happen because people would adapt. Thus, a masterable hypothetical change became an overwhelming catastrophic certainty. That catastrophic certainty, coupled with denial of all fossil fuels benefits, led to the 187 million refugees claim being coupled with calls for rapidly eliminating fossil fuels. The world, through this kind of climate mastery denial, plus broader benefit denial of fossil fuels, is led to believe that it is safe to disempower people through fossil fuel elimination and unsafe to empower people through fossil fuel use. And climate mastery denial is practiced not just by the disseminators and evaluators of the knowledge system whom we interact with, such as trusted media sources and government spokespeople, but throughout the knowledge system. For example, the key role of synthesizing climate-related knowledge, led by the UN's revered Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, engages in major climate mastery denial. As one particularly damning piece of evidence, the IPCC's multi-thousand-page assessment reports do not mention the fact that climate-related disaster deaths have been plummeting. This is exactly as much a failure as would be a report on vaccine side effects that did not document the decline in infectious disease deaths due to vaccines. Before the modern anti-impact environmental movement, leading thinkers recognized that climate is naturally dangerous and that fossil fuels are a tool for climate protection and enhancement. For example, Ralph Waldo Emerson called coal portable climate. Every basket is power and civilization, for coal is a portable climate. It carries the heat of the tropics to Labrador and the polar circle, and it is the means of transporting itself whithersoever it is wanted. Today's anti-impact designated experts can't, really won't, see the fossil-fueled climate mastery that Emerson could, even though it is far more potent today. Both the fact of enormous and growing fossil-fueled climate mastery and the fact of enormous and growing climate mastery denial are crucial pieces of context to consider as we evaluate the climate impacts of rising CO2 levels. The fact of enormous and growing fossil-fueled climate mastery means that anything short of a completely unprecedented negative climate impact, such as a rapid, unstoppable rise in temperatures, storms many times more powerful than today's, and sea level rises measured in feet per decade, will be readily masterable with continuing fossil fuel use. The fact of enormous and growing climate mastery denial means that many, if not most, if not all, of our knowledge system's claims of climate catastrophe or apocalypse will be based not on actual evidence of catastrophe or apocalypse, but rather some predicted climate negative impact, absent the enormous power of fossil-fueled climate mastery. With that context in mind, we are ready to look at the climate impacts of rising CO2 levels and see whether there is actually something catastrophic or apocalyptic, or whether such claims are just another distortion by our anti-impact, climate mastery denying, knowledge system.